SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Cammeraygal people and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to, from the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water. Yira Damarang, hello. I'm your host, Luana Grant, and welcome to NITV Radio for this Wednesday, the 3rd of April. Coming up on today's show, NITV Radio chats to Annabelle Meadley, the Inclusion and Diversity Coordinator at Football New South Wales, who is discussing the 2024 NAIDOC Cup Jersey Design Competition, as well as the upcoming NAIDOC Cup happening in July. And recently, the state coroner made 28 recommendations to avoid a repeat of the catastrophe of the 2019-2020 Black Summer bushfires. She handed down a lengthy report into the cause and responses to the deadly fires, but some residents say more needed to be done. On NITV Radio today, we also share some stories from our NITV news team. All these stories and more coming up after the latest news headlines.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
In this bulletin, family of Western Australia's first child to die in youth detention hope an inquest will lead to an overhaul of the justice system. Northern Territory Police Union says enforcement of two-week youth curfew in Alice Springs may be unlawful. And Iran says it will retaliate after Israeli airstrike hit consulate in the Syrian capital. The heartbroken family of Western Australia's first child to die in youth detention hope an inquest will lead to an overhaul of the justice system. 16-year-old Cleveland Dodd was found unresponsive after harming himself inside his cell in a troubled youth wing of a high-security adult prison in the early hours of October 12, 2023. The Indigenous teen was taken to hospital in a critical condition where he later died, causing outrage and grief in the community. His mother, Nadine Dodd, told media at a pre-inquest media conference on Tuesday that her family was still reeling from the loss of her son. If you or someone you know needs support, call Beyond Blue on 1300 224 636 or call Lifeline on 13 11 14. The Northern Territory Police Union says the enforcement of a two-week youth curfew in Alice Springs may be unlawful. The Northern Territory Police Association says they've received advice that the Emergency Management Act 2013, which is the legal basis for the NT government's emergency measure, does not allow for the enforcement of the curfew. President of the NTPA, Nathan Finn, says this leaves officers at risk of acting unlawfully.
Our concern is that the Emergency Management Act, which the ministers relied on, obviously, to claim these powers, is potentially unlawful, and putting our members in a situation where they're actually going to be acting unlawfully. We don't mean to be, obviously, critical of the decisions by this government, but we've seen time and time again that our members are the last thing they're thinking about, OK? They're putting these legislation forward, they're making them do this work. We're saying that we don't support the legislation which they've come across, and we're trying to protect our members to make sure they're supported in doing what they need to do.
The youth curfew, in place from 6pm to 6am each night, follows an eruption of violence last Tuesday where up to 150 people were involved in brawls following the death of a teenager in a car accident. NT Chief Minister Eva Lawler says she welcomes any potential legal challenges to the government's emergency declaration. Ms Lawler says the government is still determining whether or not to extend the curfew. More than $62 million was donated to campaigns during the 2023 Voice to Parliament referendum. The Paul Ramsay Foundation was the highest donor during the referendum, with $7 million spent on the Yes campaign. Australia's Big Four banks spent a combined $7.9 million on the Yes campaign. Australians for Unity received almost $10 million in donations for its No campaign. Iran says it will retaliate after an Israeli airstrike hit its consulate in the Syrian capital Damascus, killing seven Iranian military commanders. Iranian President Ibrahim Raisi says Israel is turning to blind assassinations after failing to destroy the will of the resistance. Israel has a long history of targeting Iran's military installations in Syria, but Monday's attack is the first time it hit the embassy complex. Protesters took to the streets of Tehran calling for retaliation. Mohammad Ravizi was among them.
We know that this act is done out of desperation, and that the regime is in a serious predicament and is caught in its internal crisis and the war in Gaza. It is natural that, in line with the crisis-solving strategy, it tries to transfer the crisis from the inside to the outside, to free itself a little, so this rude action can make it easier for them.
The World Central Kitchen Charity Group has confirmed that seven of their aid workers, including Australian woman Romy Frankham, were killed in an Israeli airstrike while delivering food to northern Gaza. The food relief organisation says the group of workers were killed despite coordinating their movements with the IDF and driving through a deconflicted zone in vehicles branded clearly with the charity's logo. World Central Kitchen CEO Aaron Gore called the attack unforgivable and sees the killing as an attack on all humanitarian organisations trying to prevent widespread starvation in Gaza. Mark Purcell is the Chief Executive Officer at Australian Council for International Development. He told ABC's afternoon briefing program that this attack was part of a broader trend that has seen 196 humanitarian workers killed since October 7.
Zomi was one of a small band of fairly special Australians that commit themselves to going into conflict zones or disaster zones, putting their own lives at risk. So our hearts go out to her family and her colleagues at World Central Kitchen for her loss and the loss of her colleagues. It seems to be part of a larger pattern, unfortunately, though, that humanitarian workers have been targeted, although the Israeli Defence Forces are aware that they're operating in the area.
Opposition leader Peter Dutton has called for a shift to nuclear energy in an attempt to lower electricity prices for small business owners. Speaking at the National Small Business Summit in Sydney, the opposition leader has highlighted the advantages of nuclear power, saying it has the potential to boost the economy. The opposition is gearing up to present a new proposal which will recommend the repurposing of old coal factories into nuclear facilities. Mr. Dutton says Australia is one of the few major economies that has yet to create a nuclear policy.
Nuclear is the only proven technology which emits zero emissions, which can firm up renewables, and which provides cheap, consistent and clean power. And yet, bizarrely, Australia is the only country in the top 20 economies in the world which has not embraced domestic nuclear power or is taking steps to do so.
Tensions are flaring between the state and federal government over the delayed completion and cost blowouts of the Inland Rail project. The major freight line project is a 1,700-kilometre rail line intended to link Melbourne and Brisbane via the regions, reducing truck volumes, highway congestion, carbon emissions, and to better connect farmers to businesses. Cutbacks to the program came after an independent review in 2023 found major cost blowouts in the former government's plan. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says Barnaby Joyce left the project in a mess.
Inland Rail was the one project he talked about, and frankly, it still didn't have a route to the port, any port at all. In Brisbane, in Gladstone, in Melbourne, it was massively over budget with over $31 billion. This is a mess. This is a mess that the Coalition left with unfunded, unplanned thought bubbles without having a proper plan for Inland Rail.
Premier Stephen Miles is adamant the rail must reach Brisbane as promised and says he has never seen a more incompetent attempt to get approvals in his entire time in government. Hazard reduction burns in Victoria's state forest will continue after the federal court ruled they were unlikely to impact local endangered possum populations. Environmental group Save Our Strathbogie Forest was seeking an injunction against Victorian government's planned burns in the Strathbogie State Forest over risk to the southern greater glider. In handing down his decision, Justice James Horan said burns would generally result in low-intensity fires with limited impacts on the canopy. The judge noted the collapse of hollow-bearing trees could kill or injure gliders sheltering inside, but said it was unlikely to be common or widespread. Save Our Strathbogie Forest President Bertram Lobert said the group was dismayed by the decision. The Bureau of Meteorology says the El Niño weather event is ending with rain soaking large parts of the country, indicating a looming La Niña. The Bureau declared an El Niño weather event in the Pacific Ocean last September, expecting dry conditions and above-average temperatures. However, dry conditions have been limited throughout the country this year, with the Northern Territory averaging just under 260 millilitres of rain in March, the second highest March rainfall on record since 1990. The La Niña weather events are categorised by wetter conditions and lower-than-average temperatures. Taylor Swift is now ranked as one of the world's richest people. She's entered the Forbes World's Billionaires list for the first time with an estimated net worth of $1.68 billion. Forbes says there are a record 2,781 billionaires for 2024. And now for a look at today's weather. Broome, mostly sunny 38. Perth, sunny 31. Adelaide, a shower or two, 21. Melbourne, showers 17. Hobart, cloudy 15. Albury-Wodonga, sunny 22. Canberra, mostly sunny 23. Wollongong, a shower or two, 22. Sydney, a shower or two, 25. Newcastle, a possible late shower, 26. Brisbane, a shower or two, 31. Townsville, a possible shower, 31. Cairns, also a shower or two, 31. Alice Springs, sunny, 27. Darwin, a shower or two and a possible storm, 34. And the Torres Strait Islands, showers and a possible storm, 32. And that is NITV Radio News.
Your community, your conversation. NITV Radio. Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Luana Grant, and you're listening to NITV Radio. Still to come on the show, NITV Radio chats to Annabelle Meadley, the Inclusion and Diversity Coordinator at Football New South Wales, discussing the Football New South Wales 2024 NAIDOC Cup Jersey Football Competition. And we share a story from SBS News. But first, here are a few stories from our NITV News team. The main lobby group backing last year's Indigenous Voice referendum spent more than $43 million on its campaign, almost four times more than the next biggest spender. The Australian Electoral Commission has released new figures shining a light on donations made during the campaign. Cameron Gourley has more.
Referendums don't come cheap, with new figures from the Australian Electoral Commission showing campaign entities spent more than $90 million on last year's failed Voice to Parliament referendum. At more than $43 million, the biggest spender by far was Australians for Indigenous Constitutional Recognition, or AICR, the main Yes campaign group. It also received the most donations at $47 million, significantly more than the next biggest recipient, the Yes-aligned University of New South Wales, at $11 million. On the no side, leading fundraising group Australians for Unity both spent and received $11 million, and lobby group Advance Australia spent $10 million, while receiving over $1.3 million in donations. The major political parties also got involved, with the Liberal Party both fundraising and spending $1.9 million. The Nationals raised $580,000 and spent $572,000, and Labor raised $400,000 and spent $684,000. Corporate Australia's support of the Yes campaign was also clear. Energy giants Woodside, BHP and Rio Tinto all donated $2 million each to the AICR. Commonwealth Bank donated $2 million, Woolworths $1.25 million, and ANZ donated $2.5 million to both the AICR and UNSW.
Lithium is a metal that's in our batteries in our phones, laptops and electric cars, and it's a key component in the global fight against climate change. But for South American Indigenous communities, fear centuries of culture could be wiped out due to uncontrolled mining.
It's a way of life generations of Irene's family are fighting to protect, and communities like theirs are worried it's becoming a fight they won't win.
We are guardians of the highlands. We defend our land and we take care of it. If the mines come, we'll lose our culture. We won't be left with anything.
The 68-year-old rural town is just one of many located near two giant salt flats that have more than 30 mining permits awaiting approval. Thousands of square kilometres of desert, housing deep wells of salted groundwater rich with the mineral, threatening biodiversity that's been essential to the way of life. Lengthy legal battles and decades of protests falling on deaf ears as government decisions continue to favour mining companies.
Ahora quiere vender el litio en nombre de la energía limpia, pero a costa de contaminar la salina, destruir la puna, los valles, Jujuy y envenenar a nuestros pueblos.
While the minerals price recently dipped due to a short-term oversupply, global demand continues to grow. Between the years of 2021 and 2023, the price of lithium nearly tripled in the US market, Chile becoming home to two of the world's biggest lithium mining companies.
Yo creo que vivimos una crisis en la cual tenemos una advertencia grande, pero también tenemos soluciones y el litio representa una de las soluciones necesarias y fundamentales para electrificar el transporte.
The success only increasing fears for communities watching over the border in Argentina. But some have embraced the economic opportunities mining can bring.
Hoy cambió un montón nuestra vida porque antes no teníamos ni para comer cuando vivíamos en el campo. Entonces hoy en día ya estoy terminando mi casa, tengo un emprendimiento de las camionetas.
For Irene, sacrificing her way of life is not a worthwhile change. Achola Rock, NITV News.
Thousands of people spent the long weekend enjoying Blues Fest on the New South Wales North Coast. The festival has managed to go ahead this year, while other big-name music events have fallen victim to the cost of living pressures. With organisers saying the government needs to do more to support the arts. Dan Rennie with this story.
Attracting more than 70 overseas, domestic and First Nations acts, Blues Fest is still standing, while many other big-name events, like Splendour in the Grass, have fallen by the wayside.
Oh, really excited. We're just about to jump on. Two more minutes.
Despite the weekend's success, organisers say the government needs to do more to support the arts.
Government needs to get involved at a much more intense level than they have been.
Held over 5 days in the picturesque small town of Tiagra, just outside of Byron Bay, the Blues Fest this year, celebrating its 35th.
Much of the discussion has centred around the dozens of festivals who have cancelled in recent times, the latest, of course, being the long-running Splendour in the Grass Festival, which was also held right here on Bajalang Country.
This is the canary in the coal mine moment. Driven the Moo, and Splendor. You need to step up, step in, talk with us about what's going on, and let us know you actually care.
But for most, politics was the last thing on their mind. Yolngu songman Yiramal sharing his stories through song to the Bluesfest crowd.
Stories about countries and stories about rights and stories about who we are and what we believe in and what we want to do, success, and all of us, we do that same thing, yeah.
The atmosphere has been electric with performances from Yiramal, Dan Sultan and LAB, all the way from Aotearoa, the clear festival favourites.
So you grow up listening to that music, you grow up playing that music, and by the time we've got to this stage, I think all the influences are just flowing out of us. And we're just playing the stuff that really sounds nice to our ears, you know, and hopefully it sounds good to everyone else's.
Being able to share culture on a mass scale, something that's not lost to the LAB mob. While festival organisers are well aware of the challenges ahead, for the performers, spirits remain high.
Yeah, it's an exciting time of the year, you know. It's just like Blues Fest. When things change, Blues Fest is still there.
Blues Fest is always going to be here.
Dan Rennie, NITV News.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio. sbs.com.au/NITV Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. It was a fire season like no other. That's how the New South Wales coroner has described the 2019-2020 Black Summer bushfires when she handed down a lengthy report into the cause and responses to the deadly fires. 34 people were killed in the Black Summer, with fire's worst impact felt across southeastern Australia. The state coroner has made 28 recommendations to avoid a repeat of the catastrophe, but some residents say more needed to be done. Tysa Cusey with this report.
A dark red landscape blanketed in thick smoke as crews battled to contain the fires. The scenes from the 2019-2020 Black Summer bushfires will never be forgotten by those who survived its ferocious impact. Blue Mountains resident Jochen Spencer vividly remembers when the fires came to his community.
I was in Brambing with other people here when the backburn came through, and yeah, we hid. Sheltered for our lives. You know, it was quite a very traumatic experience. And I think that sort of spurred on a lot of campaigns to sort of bring more awareness to the issue of the backburns.
In total, the bushfire season lasted 8 months, spanning across the Australian continent and claiming the lives of 34 people. 25 of them, including 7 firefighters, were killed in New South Wales. 4 years after the fires were finally extinguished, the state coroner has released a 700-page report. Coroner Teresa O'Sullivan told the court, "The scale of the loss is difficult to truly comprehend." She said it was the largest recorded area of land burnt by bushfires in the state's history, with a devastating impact upon First Nations peoples. The report's 28 recommendations were directed to the Rural Fire Service, New South Wales Police and electricity provider Essential Energy. They include the need for better training, better guidelines for aerial firefighting units, improvements to communication systems and early warning and alert systems. The coroner also told the court more work is needed in light of the ongoing and intensifying climate risks. The need to adapt to climate change cannot be understated. These findings and recommendations mark the end of an inquiry spanning 78 days over 2 years, which gathered 44,500 pages of evidence. But some impacted community members, like Blue Mountains resident Corinne Sheaves, say they still want answers.
This inquiry was definitely a missed opportunity. It is devastating to see that these recommendations don't address the needs of communities to be better prepared for our changing climate.
A group of residents from the Blue Mountains gathered to listen to the coroner's findings in Sydney. Jochen Spencer was one of those who left the courtroom feeling disappointed, saying he felt ignored.
Not having residents that were so traumatised and had issues with how this not just happened with the fire, but this entire recovery process and the issues that they've been dealing with, not having their voice heard at, you know, what is essentially a coronial inquiry. There's meant to be therapeutic justice here. There's meant to be some resolution. And I don't think we feel that that has actually occurred at all.
Their demands included more localised control of emergency responses and a quicker process to investigate bushfire disasters. Bill Shields from the independent bushfire group welcomed the report's findings, but says the scale of the investigation meant it was impossible to address all the issues.
But we believe that the answers are there, and there's an Inspector General of Emergency Services in Victoria, there's one in Queensland, And Fraser Island fire, there was a report out in 8 months, warts and all. And in South Australia, they employed a consultant for the Kangaroo Island fire, and there was a report out in 9 months, warts and all. And that's all we're after.
The group says their calls for accountability have been left unanswered. The coroner says the point of this inquiry was not to assign blame, and she acknowledged the ongoing trauma felt by affected communities. Tysock Husey, SBS News.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. The 2024 NAIDOC Cup coincides with NAIDOC Week and is for First Nations footballers aged 13 to 16, chosen in the Football New South Wales First Nations state teams to compete against Northern New South Wales Football First Nations state teams. And recently, I caught up with Annabelle Meadley, the Inclusion and Diversity Coordinator at Football New South Wales, to discuss the NAIDOC Cup and the jersey competition.
My name is Annabelle Meadley, and I'm the Diversity and Inclusion Coordinator at Football New South Wales.
And can you talk a little bit about the upcoming NAIDOC Cup happening in July?
Yeah, so the NAIDOC Cup is coming around for its third year this year. So we originally started out as a one-day tournament, and now we've expanded, thanks to the New South Wales Government legacy funding. So we've now expanded last year and this year to be a three-day tournament. And so we've also expanded the age groups from just the under 16s. So we've got also under 14s participating as well. And so the tournament, basically, we have Football New South Wales here, and we create First Nations state teams to play against Northern New South Wales state teams. And we take turns hosting, and this year we'll be with Northern New South Wales.
And where will the NAIDOC Cup be held?
The 2024 NAIDOC Cup will be held at Arbuckle Land in Lake Macquarie, hosted by Northern New South Wales Football.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the NAIDOC Cup jersey competition? Can you just explain a little bit more about that?
Yes, so our jersey competition, we have that open for anyone to enter. So over the age of 16, if they have an adult that can sign that up. So anyone over the age of 16 can participate in the jersey design. So the prize is of $1,000, and we have requested that the design reflect Football New South Wales and also celebrate NAIDOC Week's theme, which is Keep the Fire Burning. And so we request that the design reflects that. So it's really exciting to have our colours and our teams representing their culture.
And how many people do you normally get entering, and what's the selection kind of process for that?
So we have here at Football New South Wales, we will be fielding 14. So we've got the under 14s age group with girls and boys, and the under 16s age group, girls and boys. And so we have an expression of interest process where if you're interested, you just put through an expression of interest, and we receive your information. And then we also will be running trials on the 18th of April here at Valentine Sports Park to select our teams.
And can you talk a little bit about how Football New South Wales is engaging First Nations people to join football through the Cup and also through the jersey design competition?
Yep, so we've connected with First Nations communities through schools and also through our Aboriginal and through our Indigenous advisory group. So here at Football New South Wales, we have an advisory group that helps us with all things First Nations football. And so we utilise our group and they help us connect with First Nations communities to get our tournament out there and also through our socials and through via email. We have direct EDMs that should have been sent to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander football players in New South Wales.
And just back to the jersey competition, how do people enter and when do the entries close?
Yep, so we've got an expression of interest form on our website at footballnewsouthwales.com.au, and if you're interested in submitting a design, you just fill out that form and attach the design in Illustrator or a high resolution, and you just submit straight through there, and the entries will be closing on the 7th of April.
And where can people go for more information? I know you mentioned on your website, do you have like social media that people can get some more information?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have our Facebook and our Instagram both have information on the NAIDOC Cup and specifically the jersey competition. So you'll be able to see information about it there, as well as you can see previous photos of our wonderful designs and jersey designs from the past 2 years as well.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much, Annabelle. And it sounds like a really great event, and also the jersey competition sounds really exciting. So, as you mentioned, there is money up for grabs for the winner of the design competition, and also it's just a great opportunity for artists out there to get their, you know, their art recognised in this way. So, thank you so much for chatting to NITV Radio.
No worries. Thanks so much for having me.
Conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
You're listening to the radio of NITV.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
And that's all we have time for on today's program. You can listen back to the show anytime online or catch any of our stories on our website at sbs.com.au. NITV Radio will be back on Friday with more stories from right across the country. I'm your host, Luana Grant. Thanks so much for listening and have a great day.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.